This episode is sponsored by Claude, the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. You're listening to Pretty Much Pop, a culture podcast, and as repeatedly instructed, we are taking a little walk to the edge of town across the tracks, but I'm not seeing any viaduct. There's like a 7-Eleven, there's a video store. Anyway, today we're talking about the British historical crime drama TV series Peaky Blinders, which started in 2014, ran for 6 seasons through 2022, and just issued a concluding film, Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man. This is Mark Lintzemeyer, and I don't understand how, even though all of us on this show have the same haircut, it only looks good on me.
This is Al Baker, a microscopic cog in his catastrophic plan, designed and directed by Mark Lintzemeyer.
Wow. I'm Sarah Lynn Bruck, and my suits are on the house or the house burns down.
And this is Lawrence Ware, and I kind of don't have anything fancy, but I'll just say in the tradition of what Mark said about haircuts, that even haircuts come with a warning label.
You were complaining that there are almost no black people in the show, so you didn't know how to make a joke about
it. A few, but not many.
Very few.
I mean, I don't want to make a joke about it because it's kind of serious, the whole racial dynamics of the time.
Right. Like, what team are we battling this time? I really saw these seasons like as video game things. Like, well, now
I think you're right.
The Italian team is coming in that we're fighting, and then the Jewish team is coming in that we're fighting.
Yeah, like Cobra Kai.
Yes.
Exactly like Cobra Kai.
I'm not sure that Cobra Kai had like clear Italian teams, Jewish teams.
It was different.
But yes.
Yeah, it's a racialized Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
Is what Peaky Blinders is.
That is terrible, Al. What are you talking about? Yeah.
There is so much that's good to say about this show, but the fact that you can kind of accurately describe it as a racialized Cobra Kai is a bit of a...
You
kind
of can.
It's a bit telling. It's a bit telling. Just some of the interesting things about it.
Although in the end, they do turn against Nazis, so they're very clear on that point that they're not...
You know, that is actually... It's kind of refreshing to be in a world where fascism is evil.
Okay, are you commenting on America 2026, Sarah? Is that what you're doing?
Am I?
Huh? I don't know.
Anyway.
But crucially, Tommy Shelby is never on the wrong side, right? Tommy Shelby is never wrong. Tommy Shelby is never outmaneuvered. And Tommy Shelby is just always the hero.
I mean, are we going to talk about that the final movie? Because in that final movie...
We can, but I think we should just talk about the show a bit first.
Yes, I think I agree. A lot of people listening to this, if this just popped up in your feed, maybe have not watched this show because there's so many prestige TV things out there. I know this was a show I was aware of. I watched the first couple of episodes, but it seemed a little slow and it just didn't grab me. And so I put it aside until we decided to cover this. And I know that I am in the same camp as 3/4 of this podcast in that I watched it for this show, for this episode.
Wow.
And it was definitely worthwhile. Don't be afraid that there are so many seasons because each season is basically a 6-hour movie. Like, they're explicitly like that. So you could...
Just 6 episodes.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm surprised you said it was slow. I thought you guys were watching the show. So you guys were not watching this show before this?
I have a really interesting history with this show, I think, because on paper, Peaky Blinders is a contender for a real slam dunk for me. We've got real luxurious historical drama.
Is it where you live?
Birmingham. No. So really important context. So Birmingham is where Peaky Blinders is based, and Birmingham is the second city of the UK. So it's by population, it's the second biggest city in the UK after London. However, it is a fine city. But one of the things about Birmingham is that is often said of Birmingham is that it has more miles of canals than Venice. And this is true, but it misses the point about Venice, right? Birmingham does not look like Venice. Birmingham looks like a sprawling concrete jungle with some areas of life within it. It's a phenomenally storied and beautiful place. It is where heavy metal was born.
Hmm.
It's where UB40 comes from. It's got a great musical history. Heavy metal is, much more important than UB40. I don't know why I reach for that. But the artistic and the industrial history of Birmingham is genuinely incredible. But it occupies a weird place in the culture because it's a grim kind of place. And that's why Birmingham is such an interesting place for a show like this to be set, because there are no stories about Birmingham, because no one's really interested in it, because it's grimy and grubby and it's in the Midlands. It's not even in the North. And, you know, it's big and it's important, but it's not really interesting. When people think of the second city of the UK, you think Manchester, right?
Which is where you're closer to. Just give us a sense of where you are compared to Manchester and Birmingham. And
geographically, I'm kind of equidistant between Manchester and Birmingham. Okay. There's a triangle in the Midlands and the North, and Sheffield's kind of up there. But Sheffield also is a city that probably people think of before
I do think of
Birmingham,
that, yeah.
Just in terms of mm-hmm. like the important cities in the UK. So Birmingham is really badly underserved culturally by UK output in general. And so everything about this show was super interesting. And then you watch the first couple of episodes. My first memory of this, because I watched it when it came out, but I didn't have a TV at the time, and I think I was watching it on some kind of computer monitor, which wasn't very good. And basically, the show is so dark that if you don't have a good contrast TV, you basically can't see anything. So my experience of the first time watching it was I couldn't follow it at all, but I thought I was probably missing out on something. Then I rewatched it later, a couple of years later, and I loved it. And that first season really gripped me, but for some reason, I didn't follow it up.
Because mm-hmm. the seasons are very self-contained. So if you want to not have anything spoiled, just stop right now, go watch the first season, come back to this recording, because the first season is just a delight. Yeah.
And all of that time, I was thinking to myself, I need to really watch this. This is quality output that is for me. I should be catching up. And then it comes around to the podcast and I finally have the excuse to watch it. And I have been so disappointed by this show.
Oh, no.
Here's my feelings in short. It is capable of so much and consistently shows you what it's capable of, but just continually jumps sharks in ways that it doesn't have to, and makes everything that's supposed to be good, that feels good about the show initially, just feel silly and ridiculous. So the cast. Can we talk about the cast?
Let's get to this.
I mean, let's talk about the rest of the show.
That's basically the thing. Statements.
The show is... In most ways, amazing, and it's just perplexing how badly it lets itself down.
Wait, Al. Let Sarah and me talk first.
Please go ahead. Go, Sarah.
So this has been on my radar, and I think that's why I think I suggested it. This has been on my radar for a while. I was like, oh, this is a good excuse so that we can chat about it. And I was happy to have the extra week to get through more of the episodes and get through the movie. And like you guys have said, the first season was great. And it just seemed like the more popular it got and the more money they probably threw at it, the worse the show seemed to become. There was definitely just kind of diminishing returns the further I got into. And I don't know if it's because it just got more soap opera-y, or I don't know. Or maybe it was just that they were just doing kind of the same things. And I was kind of hoping for a progression. You know, I also listened to the accompanying podcast, and the way they talked about it, the showrunner and the actors and the costume designer, the way that they talked about the show made it sound like exactly right up my alley. I was like, yes, I want that historical drama. I want those costumes. I want all of that. And I want to see the character development as we go from when they're just out of the First World War all the way through into middle age, and just watching how they deal with all of these big life things like love and death and all of that. But it seemed just to get sillier and sillier as it went. And I thought it would go kind of the opposite.
Lawrence, what do you think?
This is one of my favorite shows of all time. I love this show. I unabashedly adore it. And here's what you got to understand about me. When I was in high school many, many moons ago, my senior project, at my high school, I went to like a little bit of prestigious high school. At my high school, I had to do like this senior project. I had to do like a presentation and a... Do they even do storyboards? Like a 3 poster board thing? Anyway, I did mine over the mafia. And I have always been fascinated by the mafia. I've always been fascinated by crime lords and crime teams and all that kind of stuff. And so when this came out in 2013, I was just fascinated by the fact that we were getting a story about a crime family that was set not in New York City, not in Sicily, but in the UK, that they were gypsies. Like, I was just fascinated by the entire world. And so, yes, does he get silly? Sure. What the hell is Tom Hardy doing? I don't know. Oh. Adrian Brody.
He's doing work.
I don't know. It's silly, yes, but like it's clearly attractive to high level talent, right? I mean, because Al is going to say this, there is the who's who of actors in this show, mm-hmm. right? Stephen Knight, he knows how to make something that people are interested in. And so, listen, it's weird. I am a philosophy professor. I'm a writer for the New York Times. And I have to say that Sarah needs to get off her high horse.
Wow.
Because this is just a show for the people. If you are a person who enjoys crime, who enjoys seeing people win, who enjoys seeing a person outsmart people, is it silly? Sure. Did it probably work out like this in the time period? Probably not. But is it fun? Is it enjoyable? Do you get to see people wear really, really cool clothing and get to watch them operate in really cool settings? Yes. Do you get to see people like walk in slow motion toward the camera in a really cool way? Yes. Do you get to see explosions and gunfights? Yes. Sex happens. This is a fun show. I deeply enjoy it. Is it great? No. Is it really good? Yes. Don't listen to Al. Don't listen to Sarah. If you are a person who enjoys fun things, watch this show because you will get everything that you want. That is my diatribe, and I'm done.
It's perfectly fair, New York Times contributor Lawrence Ware. So the show is capable of great things, and there's so much to love about the show. So I wanted to, let's talk about the great things about it.
Let's celebrate it before we tear it down.
And it makes the rest more, you know, pointed. So firstly, the performances. They got Cillian Murphy.
So good.
At such a crucial time.
I agree. I completely
Crazy.
Agree.
I know.
Before he comes into his own, they got him there.
Yeah. And I had never had a man crush on a performance so hard as when he first turns up and he's got those eyes and he's got those cheekbones.
And oh my God. I know.
It's mesmerizing. It's a mesmerizing performance.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is just oozes with gravitas.
Yeah.
From everybody on, you know, that competing.
Yeah, immediately. And the way that they really lean into the accents and the grime and the location and the history, right? They really, that very first episode, they really lean into this is a point in history. This is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is why people in general are upset. This is why a crime family is important. Right now, right? It's a lawless time for these reasons. And here are the other political factors at play. It sets all that up beautifully, sets up all these characters, every single performance. The actors aren't just great, but they are given gorgeously drawn characters to work with. Like, everyone is angry, everyone's disappointed, and everyone's trapped.
Mm-hmm.
And they get their time to show you who these characters are. And that's the stuff that I really love about the show. And that's the stuff that never goes away, really. Because you can always, like, put Cillian Murphy in a room with any other actor and give him some juicy dialogue, and they really, really deliver. That just is incredible and is properly cinematic quality stuff that you just don't get in a lot of TV.
Okay, so I have a question, Al, because I didn't know these people. Now, I knew Murphy, but Helen McCroy, is she big over in the UK? Is she a big actress?
Yeah, she's a character. Everyone in the show is an established, like, TV character actor, I think.
So Paul Anderson, all those people, they're relatively big.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Not like big, but working actors. Like, none of these people are stars. They work. So these are people who've come up through the traditional, you know, theater into TV kind of route.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because I was impressed with all their performances, honestly. It gets a little silly towards the end of the show, but like at the beginning of the show, I was really impressed. I was kind of taken aback by all of their performances. And so I was just fascinated by what I was getting here. It's clear that Murphy is just on a whole different level. Like, his talent is just shining above everyone else. But I was really impressed with a lot of these performances. Like very few times, and it was mostly like kid stuff, but very few times was I watching it and like, that doesn't work for me. Like, it was usually a pretty good performance.
I loved, can we talk
about Sam Neill a little bit? I felt like once
oh my
that
God.
Character left, there some of my interest in the show left. And I just adored that character so much. It was so clear. What I love about the writing of the show is that every single character is so well drawn. Each one has like such a specific goal, you know, like Tommy is just ambitious. I mean, he is so ruthlessly ambitious. Like he just wants to gobble up everything in front of him. And I loved seeing him butt heads with Sam Neill's character. They were just such perfect foes. And because as we got further into the season, we didn't have the same level, the same heightened stakes that we did in those first two seasons. I don't know how you guys felt.
Oh, gosh. I completely disagree with you. I mean, yes, those first two seasons were good, but like legitimately season four is really, really good. I really enjoyed once it expanded and we're bringing in the Italian mafia from New York City. Like I do think that Sam Neill is good because Sam Neill is just a really good actor. And honestly, I didn't know that he was not from America because when I watched Jurassic Park one night, it convinced me he was from America. Yeah. I had no idea that he wasn't from America until I watched this. But I just
is he disagree. Australian?
Yes. I think yes. he is.
He's Australian. Yeah. He was born in Belfast, but moved to Australia as a kid.
Oh, okay.
And Liam Neeson helped him remember how to do a Belfast accent.
Cool.
But then after learning from Liam Neeson and recovering his Belfast accent, the director asked him to tone it down for the actual show because it was a bit, it was too thick.
It was too thick?
But it's funny. It's a beautiful character. Like he's really having a Javert moment. It's a real, in the first season, he's really strong. Sam Neill's character, what was he called? Inspector Clouseau, whatever.
Chief Inspector Chester Campbell.
Campbell. The way his character got treated in the second season was my first real warning sign that something had started to go wrong with this show. Because in the first season, he has that kind of beautifully classic, exactly Javert kind of thing. He's like, I am order. And he's got that sacred duty thing. It's my sacred duty to cleanse the filth from this place and make it safe. You know, that's a beautiful motivation. And he exercises it brilliantly. And of course, within that, there is room to hint at, of course, there's going to be sexual repression. And of course, there's going to be like sexual anger tied up in that. And Sam Neill is absolutely capable of expressing that in a brilliantly dramatic way. But no, in season two, Sam Neill's character, like he starts angrily beating up prostitutes because we can't be trusted as an audience to know that this is something he's struggling with. We need to show it on the screen and use it as a reason to get really uncomfortable sex scenes into the show. Didn't like it, thought it was the show losing confidence in what it was good at. And I think that's really a lot of where the show went after that. The stuff that was really interesting about it, really good in the first season, deep characters, great performances, interesting historical setting, were mostly sacrificed in the interests of plot. But the result was that the plot for me was never terribly satisfying either because it felt way too divorced from the grounded bits that I was engaged with. So for instance, I'm interested in the fact that this is in Birmingham and that this is a local story. Why the hell is Winston Churchill showing up? Why is Winston Churchill showing up? It wouldn't be Winston Churchill historically. Even if Winston Churchill had been in a suitable position historically, it's massively distracting. Why are the Secret Services involved? Why is why does the show turn into Ocean's Birmingham after the second season? And the whole show is about Tommy is going to get one over on everyone at the end. And you just don't even get to see him plan it. You just get to trust that he's going to do it. Every season is everyone has a perfectly principled objection to what Tommy wants to do because Tommy's stupid degrees of ambition are not connected properly to his core character. His core character is about safety. He's scared. He's got war trauma. He's scared.
Yes.
He thinks his family is in danger always. So he acts to save himself. If that's your motivation, you don't run down to London, start kicking the shit out of the two most powerful gangs in the country. And yet he does it for the sake of generating action.
So I was listening to the creator talk about the three brothers all went to the First World War together and they served together. And he was
and
saying
all the supporting
that
characters, pretty much. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Everyone from that community. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
from that community would serve together, which is why you would have entire communities who would lose all of the men in their neighborhoods, which is completely tragic.
They called them the PALs, the regiment. They would be the Birmingham PALs, because it would be everybody that you knew locally, everyone that you went to the pub with, everyone that you worked with would sign up. And it had exactly that consequence, that entire entire communities would just be wiped out in the same day.
Yeah, that's crazy. But they didn't. And they knew that they defied the odds. And because of that, they just decided, they figured that they were on borrowed time and they just went for it. And so I took that and I was like, okay, that explains a lot for me. And I think that was enough for me as far as their motivation goes.
Let's stop for some sponsor talk. I've been podcasting for a long time now on a lot of different topics. I can't keep track of it all. I was just messing around with Claude AI to do some analyses of past episodes, and it's been very good at making lists, organizing them in sensible ways. I think we've all accumulated a lot of data of various sorts. And I can tell you that this new version of Claude is markedly improved over even what I was reviewing for an ad like this 6 months ago. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. If you do research like I do, Claude's research capabilities are going to be way deeper than just a basic web search. You're going to get comprehensive, reliable analysis with proper citations. So that's been useful for me in, say, finding out what are the most important secondary sources to read on any given philosopher. And Claude doesn't just give you answers. It engages with you Socratically, so you can learn yourself. And I want to stress that Anthropic, that makes Claude, is a public benefit corporation focused on AI safety and building an AI that's helpful, harmless, and honest. I appreciated it as I was having Claude tried to update the Partially Examined Life episodes by topic page, that it was walking me through the steps that it was taking to get the information, think about how to preserve my voice in the way I'd written the page. Ultimately, working with it convinced me that I should not bother to update that page because it would just be too lengthy, and I appreciated having some entity to think through this problem with. For problems worth solving, get started with Claude at claude.ai/PMP. That's claude.ai/PMP. And check out Claude Pro, which includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode, claude.ai/PMP. I need to register a counter narrative to Al.
Sure. I came in very strong.
I'm just letting you cook, man.
I did not feel disappointed by later seasons. I did feel disappointed by, say, things that were left dangling in different seasons, like between the last season and the movie. There's a lot left dangling and a lot that's off screen, and I don't want to get into spoilers quite yet. Part of that was because they're using historical figures, right? That I didn't realize that even pretty much everybody, all this is from that podcast that is actually right there on Netflix, that you can watch the podcast where they talk to Stephen Knight and stuff, but that all the antagonists, and in fact, even the Peaky Blind, the Shelbys themselves, although they were not called Shelbys, are like based at least loosely on real people.
On real people.
That Stephen Knight was told about sort of by his father talking about the older generation of him. So Stephen Knight, who is in his 60s or whatever now, talking about his grandparents' time. And so, you know, the fact that things don't wrap up neatly with Oswald Mosley, the fascist. Well, that's because that's a historical figure that, like, if I had known more about the history, like, you wouldn't expect Winston Churchill to get shot because he's being a dick or something like that, because you know that Winston Churchill went on to be a famous person. But because I didn't know that, I didn't do the research, you know, but that doesn't stop him in some early seasons from killing off people that were real people. Anyway, but they're a crime. They died somehow. Maybe it's just Cillian Murphy's performance, but that it was not so much about plot as about his whole...
his aura, honestly.
Rosebud, Citizen Kane sort of rise. He gets more and more famous. He conquers more and more. He gets a nicer and nicer house, but never attains that safety and never attains peace of mind. And so just it becomes this thing about the moral vacuum of ambition. And I just thought that was... worked so well that the various heists and agree. Things, you know, it was a little formulaic, like that. Okay, he's why does he get away with the things he gets away with? Well, because he's protected by the cops. But in order to be protected by the cops, the powers that be, the Secret Service, are going to give him these impossible missions that he's meant to die at the end of repeatedly, you know, through the seasons.
He just doesn't die.
And he manages to wriggle out, you know, that's going to be the pattern. But I thought it wasn't so repetitive, you know, that eventually he comes up, you know, there's nobody I can beat. Oh, but now there is. Again, I don't want to start giving away things from like season 4, season 5 yet, but I felt like there was enough variation between the seasons. There was enough evolution in the characters, and not just him, right? Arthur goes through some really interesting.
Loved Arthur.
You know, he's an addict. He's a rageaholic. He's much.
And he's struggling with it. Yeah. I really enjoyed Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'll leave it at that.
Honestly, I mean, I think that the show that you, Sarah, and you, Al, wanted to watch would not have gotten this many seasons and would not have gotten this movie. Because if it had stayed in what you guys wanted it to stay in, it would not have blown up and become as popular as it did. And so that would be my pushback to you guys. Like, I hear what you're saying. I understand the artistic reasons for why you would want to see something like that. But to make it that small is not going to, and to keep it like that contained, that's a show that would be for Al particularly, right? But it wouldn't become the mainstream big show that it became both in the UK, in the United States, and really around the world. And so that would be my pushback. I hear what you're saying. I understand. It's reasonable. I just don't think that it would have been as successful as it became.
I think that's really fair. And it really clarifies something for me, because there are basically two shows here. I think Peaky Blinders is two shows. And I think both of these shows are great shows with the same cast and with the same, like, everything. And one of them is Deadwood Birmingham. And the other one is Ocean's Birmingham, or like Jason Bourne Birmingham.
That's fair. That's
right.
Fair.
Or John Wick Birmingham, or whatever Cillian Murphy wants to style.
And that's very fair. That's very fair. I mean, not as great action as John Wick, but yeah, that's very fair.
And those are both great shows, like, not in execution, right, but in ambition. It's the, you know, Tommy Shelby is the genius gang leader who has to outsmart everyone and end up on top, you know, performing some kind of heist along the way. That's a great show. And I've watched that show, and I've watched the hell out of the Deadwood Birmingham show. But when they're both the same show, they pull in different directions. And I think that's what's frustrating, because you've got this historically grounded sense, which really helps with the character and the depth. But then you need to get a fun heist off the ground in order to have your big season ender, which are delivered brilliantly and are always really, really good fun to watch. But those two things are at odds, because they required incredible things to happen in order to motivate this stupid scene.
That's such a good point. I like thinking of it as kind of two separate stories, because I couldn't help but watch this and compare it with The Sopranos, like, you know, which is also, you know what I mean? And that one really leaned into the family relationships, and all of the family stuff was folded into the plot really, really seamlessly. And so you didn't have this divide in that show that I think probably is what that might be what my problem is with this show, is that some of the plotty stuff just got kind of silly and I didn't really care as much about it. But I did care when we start losing characters, or when I'm seeing the family dynamics at play, and when I'm seeing Tommy trying to help his Arthur out, you know, for the gazillionth time, you know, that was the stuff that really pulled me in. And I feel like maybe I saw more of that at the beginning. So, and I don't want to get into spoiler territory.
Well, let's do it. Now, we're halfway through.
Okay.
It's impossible for us to keep talking about the progression of the seasons and loss of characters without start spoiling stuff. So go right ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So when we start losing major characters like Grace, when we start losing the first brother, when we lose Arthur, when we lose Polly, oh my God, you know, just when we start losing these characters and we start, that's the kind of stuff that really pulls me in, because the show is just as much about the mob and all of that stuff as it is about these men carrying PTSD, which they don't even have that. What do they call it? Shell shock at the time. But there's still such, it's a very new name. They still don't know how to talk about it. They don't talk about anything. And being able to see how that plays out with all of the women who were left behind and had to run the show while they were off in the trenches, and when they came back having to deal with that, that's all such rich material that I really, really, really appreciated about this show.
And continuing to talk about the cast here, losing people between seasons always feels a little lame.
Yeah, another red flag for the second season was when it opens with, oh, the communist dead.
which you don't know, like, was that a plot thing? Was that apparently with Arthur going into the movie, that was a plot thing. But, like, they couldn't even show him in a flashback. You couldn't even there's a scene of the main character murdering him, and you can't, mm-hmm. you just show his hat. You know, he just shows the top, like...
There's a budget, Mark. Are you going to pay his day rate for a scene that you can just shoot without him?
But, like, Helen McCrory actually died in real life.
Yeah.
So, like, okay, that's fine. Probably the communist in the first season, like, maybe he got another job. Or maybe they just decided, you know, there just isn't room for the plot about him. We want it to go a different way with Ada, the sister.
It's a signal about how much forethought they'd done, though. Like, either they hadn't tied him in, or they decided that they were just going to kill him.
Well, what did you think about the, okay, we need more gravitas in his son. So for the movie, we're going to have that kind of nice looking boy that was in the last season turned into Barry Keoghan. How do you pronounce his name? Keegan?
Keoghan, I think his name is.
Which, you know, who is a wonderful actor. And it was a great
choice.
No, he's
a great actor. No, he's a great actor.
I didn't quite buy it. Like, when I know he's supposed to be 10 years older and things, like... I don't know. It seemed a little cheesy, but you know, you got to do what you got to do to bring the gravitas. You replace Sam Neill with somebody else who's equally awesome. And they were pretty good at doing that consistently, that every villain of the season and often the love interest of the season was another
always
huge
really good.
Personality
yeah.
that was awesome.
And very well portrayed. And yeah. honestly, mm-hmm. I think part of the problem here is that there are so many years between some of the seasons. And I don't know if that's a UK thing or whatever. Like, it was just many years between seasons. And then there was, 4 years, I believe, between the end of the show and the movie. And so much time had passed. I didn't have a problem with any, and maybe it's just the fact that I have my rose-colored glasses on, and I really just enjoyed the show. And I was just along for the ride, and I didn't have my critic hat on. And I mean, I kind of did, and I got what I wanted. Like, the production design was great. The costumes were all legitimately great. It was cool the way that they were mixing that time period with different kind of songs that would not be coming from that time period, right? So it's not like a Boardwalk Empire kind of mm-hmm. thing. I did what I wanted it to do. And the fact that there was so much time between some of the seasons, you had to kind of make some of those choices sometimes with people dying, with people growing up. Maybe they didn't fit properly. Maybe you couldn't work out the contracts because they were doing other things at the time. I was kind of okay with it. I was very much okay with it. Now, I will say that I know that Barry Keoghan, I think his name is not going to be in the subsequent television series. Is going to come after The Immortal Man. So they have a whole new actor who's going to play that character. But that just happens. Like, that's what you're going to have to do. I mean, that is the reality of working with people, because Barry Keoghan can do a movie, but he absolutely is way too big to do a TV show. And I'm okay with that.
Is anybody too big to do a TV show at this point?
Well, he kind of is. And it's clear he doesn't want to do it, because he clearly wants to kind of really lean yeah. into his film work, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the gap between seasons is almost certainly because, you know, you've got Cillian Murphy and you're going to work around his schedule.
I think Cillian Murphy blew up when the show started.
Right,
he was a good
season.
Actor.
Yeah.
But he blew up right after the show started. And it's kind of admirable that he stayed with the show, because he could have gone on and done other things.
Yeah. I mean, they give him really good work to do. And that's clearly why they get some of the cast they do. I'd love to talk about some of the standout performances, but you mentioned the music. And I really wanted to bring up, I love the choice in the first season, especially, that they only had songs by two artists on the whole soundtrack. And I love that choice, because you can kind of understand one. Like, we're only going to have one artist. Isn't that an interesting choice? But then they throw the White Stripes in there as well as Nick Cave. And it's just sometimes it's one, sometimes it's the other. And I just love that choice. But then they water that down in the later seasons as well. But I do really love the way that they use the songs. Like Red Right Hand.
I got pretty sick of Red Right Hand.
I'll never get sick of that song.
And the 12 different cover versions of it that they put in. I mean, I know we're just not supposed to binge all the seasons in the way that we did. And also that it was in every Scream movie. So we had that two episodes in a row with that song. Mm, he's really getting a lot of residuals for that song.
From you specifically.
He's living good off that song. Seriously, that song is everywhere.
Yeah. What do we think about sort of comparing this to how a show like this progresses through the seasons with Sopranos, with Boardwalk Empire is another great example. Even Breaking Bad, right? Had to do.
Yeah.
Go some different directions. It has to visit different locales. Mm-hmm. And so I thought okay, now we're going to go to Parliament. We're going to have a whole different crowd of degenerates that he's never gotten to interact with before. I thought that was great.
I think it's fine once you've basically given up the idea of the show being about like Birmingham stuff. It felt weird in the second season when they started going to London. But once you've already started going to London and New York and whatever, it's fine. The seasons for me really were defined by the guest characters. Like, you had some weird stuff to say about Tom Hardy, Lawrence. I don't want to hear what you think about him. Because for my money, it is an outstanding performance
from Tom Hardy. He's just chewing so much scenery. Like, he has so many ticks. It's not a bad thing. I'm not complaining.
Just on the right side, though. It's just on the side of good.
I'm not complaining about it, but, like, he just holds that line. He has so many weird stuff going on with that character and the choices that he makes and the fact that he is hardcore Jewish. Like, really Jewish. And I have no problem with it. It's just that he was just really chewing scenery. And I like when actors get to chew scenery.
I like it.
And I enjoyed it. And the show was a show where it allowed him, because in any other show, that is such a weird character. And that is such a weird performance, but it fit within the context of this show. And so I enjoyed it. It was really weird for me. But Adrian Brody is doing something like that. Like, all the people who are like that are, like, they're signing up for the show because they're allowed to do that chewing scenery kind of acting, and they chew it up.
I mean, really, especially with Adrian Brody, like, you've hired Adrian Brody for that job. You're going to let the
to
man
be
cook,
Adrian right? Brody. Yeah.
Yeah. You just let him loose.
Anna Taylor-Joy in the last seasons that she gets to do her weird thing that she does, being Anna Taylor-Joy.
I liked her as an addition. Uh-huh. I liked a lot of the women in this show just because, I mean, certainly Polly was part of it, and she was such a leader in so many different ways. I mean, I know she was technically their aunt, but she was also a mother figure. She seemed like a sister figure. She was the one who was behind all the financial stuff. You know, she and Tommy, I could really see them as very much like business partners in this. And it was really fun to see, especially during that historical period, a woman really kind of take charge in a way that seemed realistic. It didn't seem like it necessarily came from the brain of somebody who was, you know, from the 21st century. It seemed like that could be possible during that time.
The way the show treated women is really interesting because the characters were really deep, really well drawn. They occupied really interesting places in the, you know, the hierarchies of the show and within the family and so on. But the way the plot treated women was really, really cruel, unnecessarily, in a lot of places, especially Polly.
Yeah.
There were a lot of cases where the show made women suffer for the sake of furthering the plot in a way that just made them victims, and that doesn't happen to the men, and that bothered me.
I don't know if I agree with you, Al, because yes, I agree with you that yes, women were suffering in the show, to be sure, but men were doing a lot of suffering as well. I mean, there was a lot of internal stuff that was going on with Arthur, a lot of internal stuff that's going on with Cillian Murphy. When I watched the show, I didn't walk away thinking that the women were getting a bad rap. It's just that they were all suffering and that they were all going through the ringer, but just in different ways.
Sure. So specifically
Grace or?
Yeah. So, I mean, Grace is just kind of dumb, right? That's a character who literally dies in order to give the plot somewhere to go.
Like, she was the co-star in the first. I missed her more than Sam Neill as that really important character she was in the first season.
And with a really interesting background. There's so much you could have done with her. But she dies in order to give Tommy a reason to do something. So that's, you know, literally a great case in point. Polly needs to be sexually assaulted so that we understand that Sam Neill's character is a worse guy than we thought he was.
Right.
Right. The show didn't need to do that. Polly also like descends.
That felt like the time period though, like because that is the reality of women during that time period.
No, it's not. It's not, Lawrence. Is it not? No, it's not. It's okay. Not. There's a lot about sex that the show does, which is completely ahistorical. So yeah, of course, women were sexually assaulted with no recourse. Mm-hmm. But firstly, Samuel's character didn't exist. Polly's character didn't exist.
Agreed.
Decision to have that scene is a narrative choice. And I think you have to justify that narratively. I don't think the show does.
Fair.
But also the way that it leads directly onto my next point, which is that another way that women are treated in the show is just show that Tom Shelby can get whatever he wants. Every woman who wants to be with him, any woman he looks at is his. The show kind of suggests that what it's doing is suggesting that people in that period were more sexually liberated than we give them credit for. What is certainly true is that there is more sex that happened in that period than we usually see in period drama. What is not true is that women of any social standing, working class, middle class, or otherwise, would be alone in a room with Tommy Shelby under any circumstances. Just wouldn't happen. So that is a huge, like, you just giving up any claim to your credibility of about like gender dynamics in that society, which is a real shame because the show does a lot that is really interesting in that domain, but it throws it all away for the sake of having sex on the screen. And that really annoyed me.
I saw some articles specifically about the treatment of Jesse Eden, who is a historical feminist who is doing things in the
a legendary communist organizer from Birmingham who wasn't around in that period.
Like, I'm going to go use the men's restroom because there's no women's restroom on the floor, which is a very sort of more modern kind of feminist critique that one would just, at least this article is looking at, like, there's no way she would do that. There's no way she would be seduced in this way by Tommy, you know, that it's just a way of having him able to go among these historical personages, starting with Churchill, who I think I just saw something that he was recast like three different times, so it's not the same person.
Yeah. Speaking of recasting.
Throughout the run.
We got lots of good Churchill impressions.
They all did the voice.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you that it's actually not that hard.
Yeah, I wonder if it was, again, the thing with Oswald Mosley, who is another really good villain. And I wonder, just I'm not as familiar with Sam Claflin's work as some of these other people. So even though he was, you know, also scenery chewing and awesome, it didn't strike me in the way that all these people that I recognize, you know, Adrian Brody and the Tom Hardy and Aidan Gillen and people like that.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that you have to show him, Tommy, interacting with these people. But of course, it's not going to actually wrap up in a satisfying way. I got a brief, you know, they mentioned that his wife, that the wife of the Nazi was from the Guinness family. Like, oh, is this House of Guinness? Is that a spinoff show? No. This is a century or, you know,
crossover event
earlier.
Of the century.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's not a continuation of that plot line. But I was actually excited about like this whole the rise of fascism in England plot. Like, I want to hear more about that. I want to show about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, turn on the news, Mike.
So I wanted to talk about class, how it treats class in this, and because that's kind of a through line all the way from the very beginning through the movie. And I wasn't clear on the connection between, I knew that they were all working class, obviously, but when you become an officer in the army, I mean, it seemed like Tommy was sort of that kind of pushed him up. And I didn't know that that was really possible in this society. Was he considered higher class because of that? And I know that he wasn't necessarily considered higher class because of his work.
So, okay. I'm going to be overly confident about my understanding of the class.
Okay, I want to know.
Early 20th century Britain, but I have the right voice, so it'll probably sound convincing. So, well, one of the things the show expresses very clearly about classes is that the way it works in the UK is that there is an awful lot of kind of flexibility within a class strata, but there is a very hard ceiling. So Tommy can rise a really long way on his own merit and on his own action, but absolutely no further. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of places that he just will never be able to access. So your question about officers in the army, there's two different kinds of officers in the British Army that were, I don't know if it's still the same, probably is, commissioned officers, non-commissioned officers. non-commissioned officers are what people who don't go to officer school can become commissioned officers of the posh kind. So there's, again, there's a hard ceiling. So Tommy Shelby, like, clearly became a leader of his unit during the war and carried that respect back home with him. And that absolutely makes sense. That those kinds of dynamics, I don't know historically, but they frequently appear in like TV shows around the period. Like, people carry their war communities back home with them. That absolutely makes sense. And what also makes sense and is very, very well drawn for the period, much better than in a show like Downton Abbey, which is, you know, outright fantastical with the way that people are able to transgress class boundaries in the same period. What Peaky Blinders does extremely well is show that there is a hard division. No matter how much money and power they accumulate, they're not the establishment and they never will be.
Yeah.
There's so much more individual themes and things. The treatment of gypsies throughout, right? Which is not a term that
I was just going
to
mention
allowed
that,
to use, yeah. But that the, you know, it's really an interesting sort of side look at gypsy culture, and that some of the characters that he's even interacting with in later seasons are traveling around in caravans and like are the quintessential like no class, you know, untouchables if there is something in that society.
Yeah, exactly.
Are they still around? Are gypsies still around? I don't know anything about it.
So Romani, gypsies and travelers. So the problem with gypsies is that not everyone who lives as a community with no permanent residence is a gypsy. Some of them call themselves other things and are other things. Gypsies are a specific subsection of those people. Romani gypsies. Kind of a dark mark against the show in the first season. They didn't get the right advisor on how to show Romani people, and they were speaking Romanian, not Romani.
Oh, no.
Is that what they were speaking in the movie?
I think probably they'd figured it out by then. But
was there any hubbub like, oh, Rebecca Ferguson, she's not a real Romani person, you know, or is she? I don't know if this is his point of sense.
I have no idea.
I don't know. Yeah. Probably not. I would hope and expect that some members of the cast are Romani, but no, I don't remember any fuss about it one way or the other.
Yeah. What about these other subcultures and things?
So, yes, yeah, so, I mean, speaking of undesirables, this is why the expert, even though it does require a leap, I do really like the fact that they explore Jewish gangsters in London that were around in that period. It is largely forgotten that Jews in New York and in London, like having been exiled from most of the rest of the world where they previously lived, like took up in these places and became one of the leading like organized crime crews around. I love it when that's explored, because I think it gives the Jews a bit of edge that they sorely lack sometimes.
I mean, ultimately, what I'm hearing from you guys is that Al has quibbles. Sarah is upset that plot took over character development in later seasons.
Accurate.
But ultimately, you guys are praising the show. Like, it sounds like this is what they do right. This is what they do right. This is the way they do right. And you have your quibbles. And I think your quibbles are fair, particularly with me having never been to Birmingham, don't know anything about Birmingham. The only Birmingham that I know is Birmingham, Alabama, which I've gone to many times before.
Which you should, when you're there, you should call it Birmingham.
Is that what I should do?
Birmingham?
Sorry. I'm American.
I'm just making a joke.
Have you tried the accent? Have any of you tried the accent?
No, I'm never going to try it, because my son, however, is really good with the accent, but I'm not going to try it. But I think you guys have fair quibbles, but like the show does a lot of things right. And there's a reason why it is so popular. There's a reason why a movie came out of it. There's a reason why after all these years, they're still returning back to it, making future seasons. Big actors want to work with it. Like, there's a reason for that. And so, I mean, ultimately, we're not saying it's a bad show. We're not saying it's a failure. We're not saying that it is not worth watching or worth it being made. We're just saying that we wish it could have been better in some aspects.
I think the big advice is don't binge it, because it really doesn't.
I agree with that.
It holds up a lot better as like a special event that happens every few years.
Because the years between it helped me to appreciate it even more. Now, I would forget some of the stuff that was happening, but the years between because I would watch it when it came out. So the years between helped me to appreciate it. It eventized it. And it really helped to cement my love for it, because if you binge it, I do think you start seeing some of the issues. You do start getting tired of certain songs. You start seeing repetitive things, right? That does happen. But if it's not something that you binge, then it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
How much of this bleakness of Tommy Shelby's world do you want to experience in a row? Like, it is a moral vacuum.
Yeah.
Like, there's almost no comic relief on the show at all. Like, there's a little bit of, I mean, there's some characters that are a little goofy.
That might be like The Sopranos. You could absolutely watch that as a comedy in some ways.
Yes.
Because those characters, and even though Tony Soprano didn't have like a great sense of humor about himself, for sure, you could see him register stuff that he thought was funny or that he thought was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you didn't see any of that flash on Cillian Murphy's face. He seemed like he was always deadly serious. He was always holding it together. And Cillian Murphy does a great job of, you know, that's a character who is not supposed to show any emotion. And for some reason, we can see that mask. We can see him putting on that mask, but he never takes it off. He never takes off that mask.
I think Tom Hardy is the comic.
He is so funny. I was laughing out loud with Tom Hardy.
Yeah. The larger than life characters do provide a bit of comic relief, but it is a problem with the show. And I think it comes from some of these weird sex scenes also seem to kind of function as the relief valve. Because a lot of them are silly and absurd, and there's like that stupid Russian orgy they go to, I think, in the third season, and all that like weird stuff. But I feel like the show doesn't let itself have that comic relief because it's targeting, because it has to take itself seriously yeah. in order mm-hmm. to service the, but not in order to service the character stuff, but in order to service the like dude bro heist fun. Like, because Tommy Shelby has to be really, really cool. He can't really be funny, apparently.
Yeah, Sarah's opening line of like the suits are on the house or the house burns down. Like, that's the extent of the humor.
Great.
It's black humor yeah. reflecting on the horrible violence that they live in every day. That's
like mm-hmm. how cool they are about it. Yeah.
I was perfectly fine with there being very little to no comedy. Now, Tom Hardy was eating it up and had a great time every time he was on screen. But I don't know if I needed comedy. Like, why does a show have to be comedic? It is 6 episodes. You get in, you get out. Like, so if they were to make a show about slavery, does we want comedy in it? I think that the stuff was so dire. It was so serious. They took it very seriously. And was it a little too self-serious? Maybe. But it's their choice. I don't have a problem with them taking it very seriously, trying to go deep into the characters, understanding that these characters are dealing with a lot of trauma from the war, a lot of bad stuff happening in their time period. It's a really dark time in history. And so they took it seriously. And I'm okay with that.
It is a choice. It's a choice they're entitled to make. But the end result is a show that feels like you're sludging through it at times because the tone goes from bleak to violent to violent
that.
To bleak.
I can agree with that.
And again, this is maybe a reason just to not binge it, because I frequently found myself just turning off halfway through an episode and then having to come back like hours later, because it does feel like a relentless trudge through misery a lot of the time. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that an acceptable option for watching this is watch season one and then just go straight to the movie?
Yeah.
Like, it could work. Lawrence is shaking his head.
Absolutely not.
Terrible
Absolutely
idea.
Absolutely not. No, don't do that. No. I mean, because by the time you get to the movie, you won't understand anything what's happening in that movie. No, I disagree. Because part of the reason why the movie works, and it does work for me, is that he's dealing with, and we didn't even talk about the fact that he killed his brother, but whatever. Part of the reason why the movie works is because it's building off of what happened in the last season. That's a terrible idea. Don't do that.
We can deal with a little more of this in the supporter only after talk. That goes, go to patreon.com/prettymuchpop. But I think this is a good one that seeing the interview with Stephen Knight, the creator, about this was, oh yeah, we wanted him to have done something so terrible, which he already like gunned down random people in a gypsy camp. Like, he already, he's supposed to be like, oh, one more big heist, we won't have to do anything violent anymore. But yet he never gets away from being that kind of person with that capability. But yeah, it was supposed to make him really unredeemable, so that what actually happens to him at the end of, you know, his basic, this long suicide that is the whole last couple seasons.
Did you hear how he explained that, though? That he still wins because the enemy didn't kill him? That he still dies a winner?
Hey, time out. Okay, hold on. Are we in the after talk? Or are we still going to episode? What are we doing?
No, we're just wrapping
this
up.
This is the long goodbye.
I was confused. Okay. Because you mentioned the Patreon and you kept talking, so I didn't know what we were doing.
All right, well, okay. let's. This is exactly the kind of stuff that you'll hear a little more of, as well as other things we're expecting. If you do that. Thanks for listening to the main show. Thanks for you all being on it. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye, bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network. Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.